Most Wanted podcasts on BBC Sounds. Where is the missing crypto queen's billionaire scammer?
It starts to get very scary, very, very fast.
How did gangster's drug baron finally get caught?
He was taken completely unawares.
Why were Burn Wild's environmentalists labelled eco-terrorists?
For a long time, they were getting away with it, but that wouldn't last.
Uncover a new case
while the dog drags you out for a walk.
Listen to True Crime Podcasts on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
It's the 5th of September 2007, and Formula One folks are beginning to arrive in Monza, the Temple of Speed. It's an icon of a track, the fastest in F1, home of the Italian Grand Prix, and a home race for the Italian team, Ferrari.
And I remember it was a very rainy day.
Ferrari press officer Luca Colliani is lurking outside a certain plus-size motorhome, focused on arrivals of the British variety. You see, since that email from Sleepy Surrey first landed in a Ferrari inbox, they've been working with lawyers and Italian police on criminal investigations into Nigel Stepney, Mike Coughlan, and some senior McLaren staff. And the Italian police have been waiting for McLaren to touch down on Italian soil to be able to serve them the legal papers. On the express request of his boss, Jean Todt, Luca Colliani has been sent to witness the occasion to make sure the deed is done.
Todt asked me, say, go outside the McLaren motorhome, but don't make yourself to appear to do that.
You've seen it all before in the movies. The rain pouring down, a man in a Mac, collar up, lurking behind a wall, trying not to be seen.
I hide myself a little bit behind another team motorhome. Obviously, the rain, let's say, calmed down a potential spectacular effect. Let's say that.
The deed is done. But there's less satisfaction on the track this weekend for Ferrari. Following a whopping 200-mile-an-hour crash in final practice, their number one driver, Kimi Raikkonen, can barely hold on to third place, behind Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso in first. With only five races left to go, McLaren are leading both the drivers' and constructors' championships. But the Italian team is about to have its moment in the sun, because on top of the Italian police investigation, Max Mosley has secured some new email evidence. It's time for a second extraordinary meeting of the World Motorsports Council in Paris. And this time around, Ferrari have McLaren right where they want them.
I still can't believe it happened. The extent of it, the way it was done.
It was like a bomb that exploded within the team.
I've never heard of anything like that at that level. That's crazy.
Would you do anything to win? You probably would.
Everyone's so arrogant, they thought they were untouchable.
This has turned into an all-out brawl, and it's happening in front of the entire world.
Formula One really looked into the abyss in 2007.
One of the biggest stories in the history of Formula One.
But it will haunt the people involved for as long as they live.
I'm Pete Tong, and from BBC Sounds and BBC Five Live, this is Sport's Strangest Crimes, Spygate. Chapter 7, Seeing Red. Monza might only just be over, but the F1 schedule is relentless. And as soon as the teams have packed up, they have to go and do the whole thing all over again at the Belgian GP in Spa. It's the longest track in F1, and boy, is it gonna feel long for British team McLaren. While their key personnel make a pit stop at the hearing in Paris, mechanic Mark Priestley was part of the team that went straight on to Belgium.
I remember this day like it was yesterday. It was such a big moment, I think, for all of us. This is where we knew things were potentially serious. And if this hearing goes the wrong way, we were speculating about what the outcome could be of that because we had no idea, but we knew it was very, very serious.
A nervous wait for the team. Okay, Sarah, we're at a familiar place, the FIA HQ on the Place de la Concorde, where we've got Max Mosley armed with some new evidence. It's time for the hearing, take two. So Sarah, let's start with a roll call. Who's here this time?
Well, it's a full house, Pete. Standing room only at this one, with ancillary rooms for the overspill from both teams. And it's another Who's Who of Formula One. Don't worry, Pete, all your favourites are returning.
Oh,
Max Mosley. Yeah, Max Mosley's here. Whee! Bernie Eccleston. And our council member, Graham Stoker. Then, of course, representatives from the teams concerned, including McLaren's Ron Dennis and his Ferrari counterpart, Sean Todd. And F1 photographer Darren Heath, who we've heard from before, is there as a kind of personal paparazzi to the FIA to capture it all.
I was coincidentally working with the FIA as their photographer at the time. So I went to the hearings in Paris. It was a real buzz to be in that environment and be the only photographer inside the building.
I've also heard some rumours of VIP debutantes. Have our star McLaren drivers been invited too?
Yes, Lewis Hamilton is in the building and we finally get to hear from him. The British media have been bigging him up as the star witness. But don't get your hopes up, Pete. Spoiler alert, I'm afraid we only get a total of 5 words from Lewis, and those are, it is, I have, and yes.
How disappointing.
He's basically just asked to confirm a written statement he's already given. The statement says Hamilton, quote, knew absolutely nothing about Mr. Stepney and Mr. Coughlin or any Ferrari information, and that he knew nothing of the email exchanges between Mr. De La Rosa and Mr. Alonso.
Right. What about Fernando Alonso?
Well, he also put in a written statement and definitely got an invite, but
he had something else that he was committed to. It was all very mysterious, but there's no way in the world he was going to go anywhere near that hearing.
That's Ferrari's legal counsel, Duncan Aldred, who was also there.
So what's up with Alonso? Is he at the hairdresser's?
Well, something like that, Pete. In the hearing, Ron Dennis reveals that he and his star driver are no longer on speaking terms.
The driver who just stood on top of the podium for McLaren isn't even talking to his team principal. I thought you actually had to attend these things if you were asked.
Well, I know, yeah. It's definitely, definitely odd. But don't forget, Pete, these aren't actual legal proceedings, so he doesn't have to turn up if he doesn't want to. As you can imagine, the whole Hungary situation has made the relations between McLaren and Ron Dennis and Fernando Alonso extra frosty. In fact, we hear from Ron Dennis later in the hearing that their relationship is, quote, extremely cold. And whilst Fernando Alonso was, quote, extremely upset, Ron adds, not as upset as I was. He then goes on to describe Alonso as, quote, a remarkable recluse of a driver.
Bit harsh. Anyway, we've got quite the cast of characters, but I can't help but notice two people that you haven't mentioned, Mike Coughlin and Nigel Stepney.
Yeah, we haven't heard those names in a while, have we? They weren't at the first hearing and they won't be at the second. That doesn't mean that they're not a part of the proceedings. The word Stepney is used 80 times in the hearing. Remember, we've got the transcript, so we can check all that. And Coughlin is mentioned 173 times. But the Spygate story has gone way beyond these two at this point.
So what's the explosive new evidence being considered here?
The Italian police have been investigating Spygate in the background of our story over the last few months, and they've produced some significant new evidence, uncovering text messages between those old friends, Coughlin and Stepney, as council member Graham Stoker describes.
We wouldn't have known about text messages. We didn't have an ability to access that. That was confidential information, but the Italian police did it. They couldn't read them, but they could see when they happened, and they plotted this in a dramatic chart, which we were shown.
The dramatic chart shows that between March and the beginning of July, there are 35 calls and 288 text messages between the two men.
And those were the days you had to pay for them, right? What was it, 10p a message?
Oh yeah, Pete, I'd totally forgotten about that. So you can imagine these probably aren't short one-word responses.
But the police couldn't read them, remember? So how much use would that have been?
Well, no, but don't forget that a large part of McLaren's argument in the first hearing was that the contact between Stepney and Coughlin was totally one-sided. That actually Coughlin didn't want Stepney to keep messaging him. These records show that the communication was going in both directions and that it went on much longer than what was described before too.
And what about the information Moseley got from the drivers in exchange for their immunity?
Yes, there was never any suggestion that Hamilton was involved, but Alonso and De La Rosa submitted very full reports of what they knew, and as a result, emails between Fernando Alonso and McLaren test driver Pedro De La Rosa were passed on to the FIA, and they contain some very damning quotes. Have a read of this one, sent from Pedro De La Rosa to Mike Coughlan.
Do you know the weight distribution of the red car? It would be important for us to know so we can try it out in the simulator. No prizes for guessing who the red car is.
No.
Okay, and then what about the emails between Alonso and De La Rosa?
There are several emails where De La Rosa basically gives Alonso specific information about the Ferrari car and then goes on to suggest that it will take a while for the McLaren team to replicate how they're doing things. These are the emails that Alonso was threatening to expose back in Hungary. How about this one from De La Rosa to Alonso? All of the information from Ferrari is very reliable. It comes from Nigel Stepney. He is very friendly with Mike Coughlan, our chief designer.
That sounds pretty explicit.
Yes, and council member Graham Stoker recalls that emails like this demonstrated that more people knew about the information.
It was really the content of the emails that was quite a shock, because we'd been told at length at the first hearing that this was a rogue employee, and all of a sudden we were presented with evidence that in fact this has spread wider. It started to become clear that you weren't talking about a rogue employee, you were talking about information that was spreading.
So it's really not looking good for McLaren. How are they responding to this?
Well, McLaren is shifting focus onto saying that the information wasn't actually used or incorporated into their cars. They even produced a statement signed by 140 McLaren engineers swearing that this is the case. Ferrari accuses them of having a siege mentality over this.
And what about the big personality clashes? Last time it was the Ron and Max show. I imagine Ferrari are not taking too kindly to McLaren's arguments.
Well, this time it's very much a chance for Ferrari to get their claws out. Where last time they didn't get any official time to speak, something they weren't very happy with, this time they've got the floor for 45 minutes and they've got a new mouthpiece in the form of QC Nigel Tozzi. The Italian name's just a coincidence, by the way, in case you were wondering.
So at the second hearing, we had a QC, Nigel Tozzi, who I'd brought in from London, who, to some people's taste, Nigel was over-aggressive, but I thought he was fantastic.
Over-aggressive? Let's find out more.
Tozzi has plenty of notable attack lines. He insists that the FIA must punish them severely to stop the sport from becoming, quote, an anarchic free-for-all. Tozzi says Ferrari cars were, quote, so much better than McLaren at the Australian Grand Prix and seem to have, quote, caught up.
Meow. And what's McLaren got to say about all this?
Well, they're also getting those claws out, Pete. Their lawyer, Ian Mill, says Ferrari has a, quote, desperate need to win this season's and next season's championship off the track if it cannot achieve it where it should be won and lost, namely on the track. And when it comes to accusations put against them, they are emphatic, quote, the McLaren 2007 car is and the 2008 car will be 100% the product of McLaren technology, know-how, skill and endeavour. And, quote, no part of either car contains or will contain any element of Ferrari confidential information. They also focus on how they've been hurt by this investigation, referring to, quote, discriminatory treatment and, quote, a series of extremely short deadlines from the FIA.
Okay, it's getting catty, but what's the actual meat of their defence?
Well, they bring in McLaren's engineering director, Paddy Lowe, as a witness. And when he's asked to explain Mike Coughlan's interest in this information from Nigel Stepney, Lowe blames Coughlan's, quote, collector's mentality. And he goes on to say, quote, I've come across engineers who like collecting things, like people collect stamps.
Quite unbelievable. No harm then, he's just a hobbyist.
Yes, and there's more. When it comes to explaining those emails between McLaren test driver Pedro de la Rosa and Fernando Alonso, Ian Mills says, quote, Mr. Alonso was new to the team and Spanish like him. Mr. Alonso was feeling isolated and, as Mr. de la Rosa wanted to make him feel part of the team, shared the information with him in the friendly spirit intended.
Friendly spirit. Okay, sure.
Yeah, I know. And Mill goes on to try and explain the context around the emails between Coughlan and De La Rosa. Why was the chief designer of an F1 team emailing a test driver? Well, Mill says they were pals, adding the last email exchange was, quote, banter about football and Brentford.
Surely some griping about the Bees' relegation from League One. Anyway, that's McLaren's line of defence. Photographer Darren Heath was there to capture it all on film.
I was in the room when McLaren were working out their defence, and this wide-eyed kid, Lewis Hamilton, was kind of right in the firing line of suddenly all this politics, and Pedro de la Rosa, who was obviously has a pivotal role in it. And it was interesting, as someone who's very interested in politics, it was interesting to be in that environment and see the lawyers and see how much, when the Ferrari lawyers turned up, the boxes and boxes and boxes of evidence that they had.
The fierce sporting rivalry between Ferrari and McLaren is turning into resentment, but the bad blood between the two teams is not new.
You can look at what happened in 2007, but you can't see it in isolation.
This is Andrew Benson, the BBC's chief F1 writer. He says you have to remember Ferrari and McLaren have been jostling for dominance in the sport since the 90s. Their respective team bosses couldn't be more different. And added to that, McLaren are sensitive to the idea that Ferrari seems to get preferential treatment from the FIA. Remember the old joke about the acronym standing for Ferrari International Assistance?
Because of that distrust and mistrust and the personal antipathy as well between the two bosses of the teams, Jean Todt on the one hand at Ferrari, Ron Dennis on the other hand at McLaren. So you've got all that history. And now it collides, almost like two supernovas colliding, with them both going head to head for the championship for the first time for 7 or 8 years.
At the hearing, time is running out. Max Mosley invites both parties to provide their final submissions.
Yes, first up is Nigel Tozzi for Ferrari. He is advocating for a severe punishment and finishes up with a lovely metaphor. Sometimes when a patient is sick, unpleasant medicine must be administered, for it is in the best interests of the patient.
And McLaren?
Well, Ian Mill jumps in to say there are those at McLaren who have, quote, taken quite enough medicine. And then it's time for Ron Dennis to take to the floor, who promises to keep it short and unemotional.
Let me guess, it's not that short and it's quite emotional.
Yeah, I mean, this is Ron we're talking about. I think that's a fair assessment, Pete. The headline is, quote, punishing 1,300 people and my lifetime's work for the action of one individual is extremely severe. And we can really feel that personal dynamic again as Ron Dennis turns to Max Mosley. I compromised myself by calling you in Hungary, Max, but I told the truth. So it's clear, according to Ron, he really did not know about the data breach. And with all the drama of a Shakespearean tragedy, Ron Dennis has another parting plea for the council. Let the punishment fit the crime.
Darren Heath was poised with his camera.
I certainly caught what I really value, the pictures of intimate moments where Ron is talking to Max Mosley. And you can see the expressions of desperate pleading almost on the face of Ron and the impassioned, cold look of Max and the look of Jean Todt about to put the knife into McLaren, if you like. These kind of things that one was just aware of and they're playing out right in front of you. And I was photographing them. And it's almost in a situation like that as a photographer, you feel you're intruding. But of course, I was there for the FIA to document it, so I did my job.
Following the final submissions, the president and World Council members leave the room to begin their deliberation.
And then the question, really, and this is the big fundamental issue that was presented to World Council, was how to resolve this in such a way that it really didn't destroy the championship, in effect, severely damage or perhaps put out of business a team.
The real problem for McLaren? The 2008 McLaren car is already well into development. So any ban would surely have to apply for both the 2007 and 2008 seasons.
When we started to look at the consequences of that, a two-year ban, we think, would have had such a dramatic impact on McLaren that, I mean, it could have almost put them out of business. I mean, we're dealing with 1,300 employees and a major Formula One team, and the consequences of a two-year ban would be so draconian. So the question then was, well, what could we do about it? One couldn't take the points away from the drivers, because the drivers, of course, had already agreed that if they gave this information to the FIA, they'd be protected. So we'd have to leave their points in place.
But for the boss, FIA President Max Mosley, it's clear. A ban is the right way forward. His friend and ally, Bernie Eccleston, turns to him. Bit heavy? But Mosley is a hard man to disagree with. The iron fist in the velvet glove is clenching, ready for a fatal blow. Just over 200 miles to the northeast, the McLaren race team are staying late in the freshly painted garage in Belgium. Huddled together like baby birds in a nest, they agonize over what their fate will be.
We could get thrown out. We could get banned from racing. You know, it could be the end of McLaren. Who knows? We were literally speculating on that kind of level. So there was a nervousness, and we went through the build-up to the weekend, setting everything up as normal, knowing that there's a very good chance we might be doing this for nothing. It's absolutely deadly silence, pitch black outside. We're in there with the garage doors down, and it's just us in silence, waiting. And we're just waiting and waiting for a phone call to come from Paris to tell us what's happened.
And back in Paris, Ferrari have insecurities of their own.
We were confident that with the new elements, it was impossible for McLaren to escape from a punishment, as it was the case in the first one. But obviously, like in racing, you don't win until you go under the checkered flag first. In a court, you don't win until the sentence is done.
Meanwhile, a group of the council members and Bernie Eccleston are trying to talk Mosley down from a two-year ban for McLaren when they have an idea.
What about a fine? Because you've got to understand, as the World Council member for Great Britain, one of my jobs was to protect the British Grand Prix, and the other job was to try and protect British motorsport. And McLaren was a significant part of that. And so, at the end of the day, we moved towards a fine.
Okay, a fine. But this solution posed a new question. How much?
In terms of the amount of the fine, I mean, with my lawyer's eye and looking at the turnover of McLaren, I thought something around $20 million would be a sensible figure.
After just over 1 hour, at 6:40 p.m., the council announces its decision. And it's not Graham's sensible figure, it's an eye-watering nine-figure fine to the tune of $100 million. Yes, you heard it right, $100 million. It's the largest fine in the history of sport, let alone Formula One. And they're being thrown out of the Constructors' Championship. I mean, Sarah, let's start with the fine. What a number. And that was 15 years ago. What's that in today's money?
Yeah, I know. Well, with today's climate, Pete, it's probably changing on an hourly basis, but roughly it's about $143 million now. Either way, you have to wonder how carefully calculated that $100 million fine was. Because this megabucks punishment would have killed off other teams in F1. They simply couldn't have afforded to pay it and continue to race beyond 2007. No way. There were only two teams who could probably absorb this level of fine. Any guesses who they were, Pete?
Ferrari and McLaren.
Spot on. The two biggest teams in F1 history at that time. They were the only ones who you could safely say had the resources to cover it.
And how normal were these sort of fines in F1?
Yeah, it's a good question, Pete. To give you some perspective, the biggest fine in Formula One up until the Spygate verdict was $5 million. That had been handed out the previous year to the organisers of the Turkish Grand Prix for a podium ceremony controversy. And that's where the sports rules on political neutrality were deemed to have been broken by a guest presenting the winner's trophy.
You can look that one up. So somehow we've jumped from a measly 5 million to 100 million. Were there precedents in other sports?
There have been some fines that were considered large at the time. Most handed out in the NFL. There was an example from 2007 that was a $500,000 fine, a $500,000 fine. And there have been a few handed out in the NBA too. But as you said, Pete, Spygate goes down in history as the largest fine handed out in sport ever.
Yeah, I mean that $500,000 NFL fine is a tiny, tiny fraction of this one. So how are McLaren going to find the money? Will Ron have to sell off some of his supercars?
Not quite. McLaren are being punished with a $100 million fine, but in reality, it's going to be a bit less. Remember, McLaren are also being stripped of all the points they have won and could have won in the Constructors' Championship, which means they're going to lose a whole lot of prize money. That's calculated according to how many points a team wins in the Constructors' standings. The FIA decides to deduct whatever their prize money would have been from the fine. So in the end, McLaren are going to end up paying around $60 million.
Still on the hefty side, was the data really worth that much?
Well, good question, Pete. Some people we spoke to, like technical director Mike Gascoigne, thought not.
The fine they were given was nothing to do with the seriousness of the data. So the $100 million fine is not because the data was worth that much. And I believe it was worth very little.
For all the data, emails and text messages, this was an invisible crime. In summing up, the FIA couldn't pin down any evidence. So although Article 151C of the Sporting Code had been breached, there was no evidence that McLaren had used the information to benefit the design of its 2008 car, and no evidence that McLaren had used the knowledge to gain advantage during the hard-fought 2007 season. There were mostly just suspicions.
Okay, interesting. But either way, with McLaren effectively out of the Constructors' Championship, does it now mean that the title's in the bag for Ferrari?
More or less. Barring any major disasters, no other team is close enough. But not all is lost for McLaren, remember? Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton, they keep their points and they're still in the Drivers' Championship. In the words of Max Mosley, if there's a podium, the drivers will go on it, but not McLaren.
Ferrari must be jumping for joy, right?
Well, it's not quite as straightforward as that.
The atmosphere was slightly stunned at the end of the hearing.
After the verdict, Ferrari's top management returned to the rest of their waiting team in the packed room next door to relay the news.
We went back to the same little room that we'd had before in the FIA building, which touchingly got a Ferrari red carpet, but tiny little room that didn't really fit all of us.
And then in that packed room, they're waiting for some phone calls, including from their president, Luca di Montezemolo, back in Italy.
Sean Tott was juggling his three telephones, one that had a Ferrari ringtone. It was the noise of a Ferrari accelerating through the gears. So very exciting. You almost wanted to let it ring rather than actually answer the phone too quickly, although it did get louder.
After some phone calls and conferring, the team's feelings about the fine start to become clear.
It was a big relief in the end when the World Council decided that McLaren was going to be excluded from the Constructor Championship. I remember when we called our colleagues in Spa. Personally, I felt that sentence like the joy of having won a race, a very important race for the championship.
But for McLaren, there is no popping of champagne. This is an unprecedented disaster. And outside the FIA's headquarters, on the Place de la Concorde, the world's press is hungrily awaiting Ron Dennis's exit. Darren Heath's finger was poised over the shutter to capture the moment.
I had a fantastic position on a balcony looking down on the melee of photographers from all over the world. And of course, Ron Dennis walked out and had to face that. And it was just a cauldron of questions. And of course, he doesn't really want to say what happened. But, you know, if you're at the top of the tree, sometimes you've got to face the music.
After running the press gauntlet, Ron has perhaps his most difficult task, a gut-wrenching call to break the news to the rest of the team. Back in the McLaren garage in Belgium, mechanic Mark Priestley is about to be put out of his misery. All eyes are on the most senior man in the room, the team's manager, Dave Ryan.
Eventually, Dave Ryan's phone rings, and he's standing at the front of the garage with everybody else, just sort of draped on toolboxes, sitting on stacks of tyres, curled up on the floor, just waiting for news. And we know it's Ron. And Dave Ryan gets the message from Ron and tells us what's happened. And he then puts the phone down eventually. And the air of expectation in that garage is like nothing I've ever witnessed before. Because he puts the phone down, he takes a big, deep breath, and there's another moment of silence, which seemed like it went on forever, before he then says, okay, this is what happened.
$100 million, a fairy tale number. Who can even begin to imagine that amount of money? But the other part of the punishment is painfully real for the team in the garage.
Hang on, we've been chucked out the Constructors' Championship here in a year when we're going to win this hands down. We've got no major competition for the World Championship in the Constructors' title here. We've got the two best drivers on the grid. We've got the best car. This is a walk in the park for us. And I had never, personally, I'd never won the Constructors' Championship in all of my years at McLaren. We'd come close many times, but we'd never done it. And this was the moment, and yet I'd had it taken away. And we'd had it taken away through something that was nothing to do with any of us in that garage. We were literally witnesses and bystanders to this, and yet we had been tarnished with the same brush that Mike Coughlan had been tarnished by. It really felt like a sort of a dagger to the heart. And I went away from that circuit. We drove home again in almost silence, but with this real empty, sinking feeling like, why are we doing this? Why are we coming back tomorrow? We're going to give everything, as we always did, and yet we can't score any points. We cannot win this championship anymore. It was a heartbreaking moment.
Next time on Spygate.
I remember sitting on pit wall looking at them saying, what are they doing? Doing another lap? You know, that's madness.
We spent so much time fighting each other. Lewis fighting Fernando, Fernando fighting Lewis, and the teams of people around those drivers being so focused on just beating the guy on the other side of the garage, and we know what happened.
It all unraveled for them in the most horrendous way, obviously, and it's like a Greek play, isn't it? Because it does end in tragedy.
Spygate is a Chalk and Blade production for the BBC. The producers are Matt Nielsen and Rosie Stopher. Sound design is by Alex Port-Felix, and the showrunner is Sarah Stollarts.
And reaction after each Grand Prix from the expert Five Live Formula One team with the Checkered Flag podcast.
What a race that was!
Listen on BBC Sounds.